This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Cast your memory back to high school English class. Do you remember what was on your required reading list? Maybe The Lord of the Flies, maybe Beowulf. How about anything by Ernest Hemingway? Chances are you were forced to read something that you hated, and you likely cursed your teacher for assigning it. But does that mean we should banish the novel from high school curricula altogether? Our next guests are on opposite corners of the debate, one on the side of abolishing fiction from required reading lists in favor of nonfiction, the other championing the fiction genre, citing its many virtues. Natasha Vargas Cooper is a journalist. She writes for The Atlantic Monthly, The New York Times, and The All, among other places. Her essay called Why We Should Stop Teaching Novels to High School Students was in book form earlier this year. Natasha, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks.
And Nick Rapatrazone, staff writer for The Millions, is the author of several books. He's also a public school English teacher in New Jersey. And he wrote an essay in response to Natasha's, calling it The Fictional Lives of High School Teachers. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hi, Virginia.
Hello there. Well, Natasha, I'm going to start with you because you laid down the original argument. Why should we stop teaching novels to high school students?
I based this off of my own experience and my peers. And I say this as somebody who loves novels and has become a huge Ernest Hemingway fan. But I went to a mega public high school with over 4,000 students. We had 38 students to a classroom. I was a pretty socially active and easily distracted young lady. And what I found was when we were reading Fitzgerald, when we were reading Hemingway, that I could not quite grasp what was going on. There was a lot of metaphor. It was very difficult to connect with the malaise and melancholy of a post-World War I emotional atmosphere. And this done in a 54-minute class, only now, at the age of 30, am I understanding the melancholy and the metaphors of Fitzgerald and Hemingway. But one of the other things I've come to recognize is how much I, when I was about 19 or 20, started to read creative nonfiction like Joan Didion, Norman Mailer, Hunter S. Thompson, John Krakauer, and how exciting and direct those works were. Mm-hmm. What if someone were to hand this to me when I was 17 and they were to say, this is a story about a group of people trying to climb Mount Everest, and they can and some can't. And that is, and it's well written, and it's a true story, and it shows you how to compose sentences, and it is engaging, and the stakes are high, and it's immediately understandable. And I wonder, well, would that have been more beneficial to me as opposed to trying to understand Gatsby?
Let's get Nick's response to that. Nick, the title of your response, The Fictional Lives of High School Teachers, was it Natasha's suggesting that not all teachers are up to snuff on this, or is it the novel itself that you reacted to?
Well, I think she was speaking, as she says, from a personal direct experience that she had as a high school student. I think when Natasha talks about the need for increase in teaching nonfiction, I agree with her, but I would also counter that many teachers from freshmen on up already do this. They are teaching some of the people in her book list. I had mentioned that I teach Shipping Out by David Foster Wallace. For me, it's not so much having to choose between fiction or nonfiction. It's more to say that we shouldn't stop teaching fiction simply because it is sometimes difficult to connect or interest students in that material.
Natasha, is it the problem of novels as a genre, or is it the traditional Western canon that is assigned in so many English classes, still with the Hemingway, still with the F. Scott Fitzgerald on it, as you experienced it? Does that rely too heavily on these classics?
I think it's both. I think the genre is really challenging in terms of how public schools are structured. And like I said, you have these 50-minute intervals. I think we spent 2 months on Wuthering Heights. Like I said, I'm 30, and now I love Hemingway and Fitzgerald, but that's because I have somewhat of a frame of reference, and why I'm all for kids trying to broaden their horizons and teachers to introduce them to that. I wonder if there's a more valuable genre, format, and title selection that could instantly grab the kids.
What do you think of that, Nick? You mentioned a couple of nonfiction books and essays that appear on your syllabus. Do students respond more favorably to those assignments as opposed to the novels you've assigned?
Well, we just finished As I Lay Dying by William Faulkner, which is, of course, a novel, and it's a very difficult novel. It's told in many different perspectives, and it's about a culture in a world that is far different from suburban New Jersey. When I give my students that book, there's always the initial hesitation, some skepticism about whether they'd be interested in this or not. What I try to do is I try to show them that it's not so much we are looking at individual lives, but we're looking at shared emotions. We're looking at tensions and struggles. And Faulkner writes about the breakdown of a family dynamic. And even with a student who has, from a suburban school like I teach at, where we have 3,000 students, they're going to understand family struggles. They're going to understand when siblings don't get along, when a parent might be overbearing. So I would say that for me, I even have students who I may have to do more work to get them to understand or maybe appreciate David Foster Wallace, even though he's writing nonfiction. A lot of times in a fictive world, because we see full scenes and we see dramatization of interaction and conversation and emotion, it's easier for us to settle into that if they're willing to go that route.
Natasha, I'm guessing that doesn't sound like the experience that you had in high school was similar to the experience that Nick is describing with his students. But a couple of questions here. Do you think you would have come to love the novel if you did not have the framework of learning about them when you were younger? You know, is there a danger in lowering the bar, assuming that kids don't get Hemingway or Dickens or Fitzgerald? You know, let's be honest, A Tale of Two Cities is not Ulysses, right?
Right. Well, you know, I don't see it as lowering the bar, because I think that the works of Joan Didion and of Truman Capote and of Norman Mailer are right up there. To me, it's a sidestep rather than a step back. I have to say that actually what got me really into reading novels was reading longer, in-depth magazine pieces and reading some shorter fiction in The New Yorker. And then eventually it was like, and reading people like Susan Sontag or Christopher Hitchens or Martin Amis's essays in my early 20s, and them talking about how these authors influenced them so much. So I said, okay, like let's see what this is all about. So that is actually what got me into novels. And maybe, and you know, I know other girls my age who loved Jane Eyre and who were totally involved, and it was great. And so, great, keep some novels there, but I think that it would be great to also usher in this other work because it's so exciting, and I really don't think that we get exposed to it. I mean, we didn't in 15 years ago when I was a high school student. We didn't at all.
We're having a discussion about whether classic American novels that tend to make their way onto high school reading lists are really appropriate material for high schoolers. Maybe not appropriate, but if the kids get them. Natasha Vargas-Cooper says no. She went to a big public high school, didn't get a lot of individual teaching attention, and says that when they read novels that she didn't care about, she just checked out. Nick Rapatra-Zone is a public school English teacher in New Jersey. He says that the novels should stay on there. Sure, they're complicated, but that's what part of engaging as an adult is, and that's what we're trying to teach anyway. Nick, I'm wondering if there's a classic novel that you loathe teaching and would be happy to eliminate from the curriculum.
Well, a book that I've moved away from is Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man by James Joyce. Mm-hmm. I think it's an important book. I think it's a complex book. Is definitely, for scholars of literature, that's something you want to look at to help understand Joyce's development before he wrote later novels. It's not a book that students love. They don't love it because it's really, really idiosyncratic and difficult, but also because it sort of has an absence of plot. It's a development of a young man's life, but it's not something that really grabs at you. So what I noticed with that book was, as opposed to focusing on the novel, I've started moving towards his collection of short stories, Dubliners. And I noticed that when students had a shorter text to unpack and they could focus on a smaller amount of characters, they started to appreciate it more. So I think part of the problem might be when you ask someone to write or to read a novel, you're asking them to devote a large amount of their life to that book. And reading takes time. And very close reading takes an incredible amount of time.
Sounds like you and Natasha have a little bit of common ground there, that you both think that shorter pieces, you're the short story and she's talking about shorter magazine pieces,
sure,
might work for students.
I wish we read Dubliners. I read Araby my first day in community college, and I was like, oh, this is the most amazing thing I've ever read. Yeah, I mean, I agree, which is that I remember when we were doing Bless Me Ultima or we were doing Wuthering Heights, that was a 3-month process. So if you weren't spot in, that's too bad. I want kids to be excited about reading, and I want kids to read novels, and I want them to learn how to write through reading, not through didactic lecturing. I just think that there might be a different approach, and I think what Nick says is correct, which is that when novels kind of demand a very deep read and a very concentrated read for a long period of time, and, you know, if we had 6 students to a classroom and teachers were paid what they should be and were given the respect that they should and the resources that they should, then I think, yeah, why not? Have them read Ulysses. But unfortunately, that's not how public school is arranged and done.
Nick, any thoughts on that? And also, is there a novel that you absolutely love to teach, but no matter how you present it, just seems to be lost on your students?
Well, the first half of the question, as to is this the right environment for it, I definitely learned, because I've been teaching now for high school for 10 years, I learned to teach fewer novels in a year. I used to teach upwards of 15 or more, which was too much. And now I'm settling in on about 10 or 5. But we're spreading them out a little bit more, and we're doing different things with them. So I definitely think it's a good point to consider the logistics of high school and certainly the support that we're given. As to the novels or the works that I love, it's not quite a hard sell, but it's maybe the harder of the bunch or the more difficult of the bunch, which is The Crying of Lot 49, mm-hmm, by Thomas Pynchon.
Pynchon, yeah.
It was interesting last year when we were reading it, really the whole NSA stuff was coming out, and they're starting to see, well, what if, you know, a paranoid character in literature is right, Oedipa Maas? What if the weird way that she sees the world is actually accurate and there is something going on more, you know, complex than she thought? So that's the book that I kind of have to maybe do more work, because Pynchon is difficult for everyone. He's difficult for college students, graduate students, and so on. But I'm willing to do that work because I think it's important to me that students not only love to read things that are real, but they love to read about emotions that are real, even if they're occurring in the lives of imagined characters.
How many students do you have in your typical class, Nick?
For my senior AP literature, I have about 26.
Okay, so can we leave this discussion with a balance of novels and a little bit of nonfiction? Can we go there with that together?
Sure.
Can I propose that we have 60-40 nonfiction? Because what I would love is to progress to the novel, is to, after there has been some reading of creative nonfiction, of reporting, and then of short stories, that the novel is the reward at the end, and it can be Thomas Pynchon. just that they have, like, it's a progression to that point.
Way to frame it, Natasha. What do you say to that, Nick?
I would mess with the percentage a little bit, but I would say that I like the idea that we can put genres and forms of literature in conversation and try to ask a student why a writer would choose a certain form over another. And I think it's healthy for students to see writers doing different things in different ways. It'll take a lot for me to give up End Zone by Donna Lillo or Beloved by Toni Morrison. so I'm going to cling to those pretty tightly.
All right. Nick Rapatrazone, staff writer at The Millions. He's also author of several books and a public school English teacher in New Jersey. Nick, thank you.
Thank you.
And Natasha Vargas Cooper, thanks for helping us get to sort of yes. We appreciate that.
This is my mission.
Natasha is a freelance journalist. She writes for The Atlantic Monthly, Book Forum, and The All, among other places. And you'll find a link to read both articles written by our guests at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. And we'd also love to know what you think. Were novels kryptonite for you in high school? Do you wish you'd had more exposure to nonfiction? You can share your favorite and most reviled novels from high school. That's at our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio.